Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's RSG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RSG fam is like, woo!
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
It don't get no better than this, baby. I want winners.
You better act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be beaten.
Don't get no more realer.
All right, welcome to another edition of the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports, RSG, Renegade Radio. I'm your host, the one-third of the illustrious three-man booth, Marcus the Game Changer. Before we get into proceedings this evening, I'd like to thank you all. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with us, and we appreciate your patronage. Now, no further ado, let me introduce the illustrious three-man booth. To my right, I got my man, D. Wills, holla at the people.
Man, we in the dog days of summer. That heat is coming down. I mean, it's good to just be in a cool place. Talking on the radio with everybody, talking about sports.
Yeah, it's a great place to be. You know, we in the basement. It's always cooler in the basement.
Yeah.
I care where you at, basement's always the coolest place to be. And that's where we're coming from, live from the basement, the Real Sports Guys, rounding out the three-man booth. We got Phil T, Sports PhD, what's happening, Captain?
Present.
Keep it real succinct. Present. We got a slamming show in store for you all. This is the intro to let them know. We give you a quick rundown of some of the things that we're going to try and get to tonight. We may not cover all of this ground because we try and pack a lot into the next 90 minutes, that 90 minutes of funk that we give you every Tuesday night from 8:30 to 10 o'clock. So we're going to get into athletes, our reaction to the Zimmerman verdict. It's a big, big story nationally. We go athletes responding to it. We're going to touch on that a little bit. And really dig into that topic. That's one of those things where sports and everyday life kind of intersect, and that's something that we like to highlight on this show. So we're going to dig into that, talk about that, give you some of our perspective on the role that athletes should play as you know, mouthpieces and whether or not they should be political or politicized and So we're going to get into all of that. We're also going to talk about, D-Wills and I got to finish the conversation we started last week. Last week, we got into talking about Kanye's album, Yeezus, and then we got talking about Jay-Z's album, Magna Carta, Holy Grail, and D-Wills was just getting into it, so we really didn't dig into the Jay-Z joint because he was just kind of getting into it, and I've been listening to it, so I didn't want my perspective to color to influence him as he went in and listened. I want him to go in with fresh ears. So he's had a week. He got at me on Twitter, you know, talking about how he felt about it. So we're going to get in. We're going to revisit that conversation. We also going to talk about Major League Baseball. Looks like they're headed for another big round of PED suspensions. Prominent players include A-Rod, Ryan Braun, Bartolo Colon. A lot of folks in the mix, anywhere from, you hear numbers anywhere from, you know, 5 or 6 guys to 20 guys. So we're going to get into that. We also going to talk about Yasiel Puig, L.A. Dodgers rookie phenom, who had been pumped up this first half of the season as somebody the fans wanted to see, somebody the fans wanted in the All-Star game. And then when it came time for the fans to vote him into the All-Star game, they voted in Freddie Freeman. Straight crickets. We're going to talk about Johnny Manziel and his continuing, just like, I don't even know what to call it. He's messing up. There's no way to put it. We're going to get into the NBA talk, hit you with some free agency, talk about some of the player movement that's going on. We're going to give you our top 8 in the conferences as of today. It's very, 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 very long way to the start of the NBA season, but we're going to hit you with our top 8. Anyway, and we're going to keep revisiting that over time. And then we're going to do a legacy check-in. You know, with the player movement that's happened, I think we've got to kind of reassess how those pieces have moved and how things have shifted. You know, where are people in this Game of Thrones that we call our top 10 NBA players of all time? How are some of these guys situating themselves, and how have our perceptions of these guys' legacies been shaped by this particular offseason? We're going to get into that. Then we're going to talk some NFL. The Patriots, they got a problem, man. Something's wrong with the Patriot way. You know, PhD, we was going back and forth over text, and he's got some issues with just the media perception of the Patriot way and how he's juxtaposed to other organizations that have had issues with players getting arrested, just how that has played out. You know what I mean? We're going to talk about Colin Kaepernick rocking the Dolphins hat. How do we feel about that? I mean, it's like flying somebody else's flag. So we're going to talk about that. Is that okay? And then we're going to get into training camp opening up in a couple of weeks. We like to do this thing where we just kind of give you 5 contenders. You know, 5. We don't like to say one team because it's the NFL and parity is the king. All right? It's always a team that comes out of nowhere. So we're going to give you 5 teams that look like they got a shot. And that 5 is going to evolve over time, and we're going to check in on that as we get closer and closer and we progress through the season, through the playoffs, to get to the Super Bowl, to see where we're at with that 5 teams that we predicted in July, see where we're at next February when we get there. So that's what we got in store for you tonight. We're going to jump right in, and in the past couple of days,
everybody want to get funky one more time.
I just missed it, Marcus. I just missed it. Sorry.
It's all good. So this edition of the Funky Editorial, we're going to talk about athletes, as political figures, athletes as vocal mouthpieces in the context and around the context of social issues in general, but in particular the George Zimmerman trial. And I want to make sure that people understand it was the George Zimmerman trial. It was not the Trayvon Martin trial. Trayvon Martin was not on trial. It's the George Zimmerman trial. I heard it referred to as the Trayvon Martin trial in different settings, and that just puts me off a little bit. I don't like that. So Victor Cruz, Roddy White in particular, came out with some very, very vitriolic tweets as the verdict came down. They said Roddy White said something to the effect of the jurors should go and kill themselves for letting a man who killed a kid walk. Victor Cruz was very upset, and his anger was reflected in his tweets. Both players took the tweets down and then tweeted out apologies for their comments. Now, before we get into talking about the whole situation and how we feel about it, first, I just want to touch on the idea. What do you guys think about kind of the censorship that seems to take place with athletes in response to big social issues, controversial social issues? I want to start with PhD. How do you feel about this whole situation with these guys having to take down or choosing to take down the things that they put out?
It was their choice. I don't have a problem with it. But if it is the team putting pressure on them to do it, I do have a problem with that. So, for example, Victor Cruz, you know, he put up something, took it down. Now, if it's his people pressuring him, you're like, hey, this doesn't look good, you know, it's going to hurt your image, you got this new deal with Pepsi, you know, okay, perhaps. Because at the end of the day, it's Cruz's decision. But if it's the Giants stepping out, you know, or Coughlin stepping out saying, hey, you need to take this down or I'm fining you, I would have a problem with that. Now, taking it a step further, if it's in his contract or if it's a team rule that the players agree upon, that, you know, the coach or somebody in the organization has authority over them in those matters, that's fine also. But what I don't like is that stuff I don't like. You know, what I don't like is – that was a joke, y'all. Nothing.
I got the joke, bro.
Okay.
Right. Anytime you drop a hip-hop reference, I got you. I'm just trying to stay in the moment, and I'm listening intently. I'm hanging on your every word.
So, at the end of the day, I'm cool with the players using this platform to put their thoughts out there. You know, I mean, in today's, you know, social media environment, and you got to think twice about stuff you're going to put out. I mean, honestly, I have a problem when you see people who consistently put things out there but then take it down when there's pressure that comes. You know, it's one thing if you figure out, okay, yeah, perhaps that was poorly worded, it's being interpreted wrong, but don't pull it down if everybody just don't agree with you and you're getting some hate. I mean, that's part of the program. So at the end of the day, I'm cool if the players are in control of, you know, what they say and their ability to take things off of Twitter.
Okay. Now, in Victor Cruz's case in particular, you know, he comes from a community, Paterson, New Jersey, that has been plagued by violence for a long time. It's a high poverty community. And so it seems as if this whole situation, the trial, the verdict, really hit home and struck a chord with him, and that came out in his tweet. D. Wills, how do you feel about what Roddy White said and going after the jurors and saying the jurors in the trial needed to go off themselves for letting Zimmerman walk?
I mean, it was his words and how he felt and his expression. I think, again, social media, and I had to be very careful with myself because I think people get that Twitter courage and that social media courage in a way that allows you to express yourself in a way that you normally
would. Is that a liquid
courage? Yeah, it's close relative.
So you know how that is.
Close relative.
I'm always, when we start to talk a little bit about how we feel about this, I'm more concerned about what they do moving forward. So however they express themselves, what role are they going to play local to begin? Because all politics are local. And so, it's been good that people are reacting across the country. But all politics are local. So, what do you do in your own backyard every day to push against these issues? And I think that's where I'd love to see athletes do more. To do some of the things that you see folks like Jalen doing with his own school and to be involved and engaging at the community level. So, if these guys take that energy and then it gets them energized to do more locally, then I think that's a positive thing. I think it's building for careers after. I mean, look at what KJ did in terms of being able to keep Sacramento Kings in Sacramento. Yeah. He's always been politically motivated. It's been about building communities. But that was something he was doing as a player. I mean, he was preparing himself. He was engaging in these issues as a player and understood the power of economics. And I think, it's good to react, but we can't have the same old solutions and reactions to these issues that we always have. We can't keep burning down stores. Ice Cube called it 23 years ago. So we can't be surprised and our reaction is burning down stores now, at Walmart, and taking TVs. We got to do something different. If they change their energy and do something different, I'm all for it. I think they're people, they're human beings who should have emotions, but it's how you channel those emotions.
Well said. And now I want to shift the conversation. I think you gave me a good segue right there. Shift the conversation into kind of us and with the whole Zimmerman situation as African-American males and having a platform, having a voice with this show. There's a lot of feelings out there about this particular situation, about how everything played out. Be free to share what you feel comfortable sharing over the airwaves with folks. I'm not trying to put you guys in a situation that you don't feel comfortable, but in response to the verdict, what was your how do you feel about the situation and the verdict and the response of the people? You kind of got into that, D. Wills, a little bit. I want PhD to go, and then D. Wills, when he's done, I want you to kind of just take it and give me your perspective afterwards. So, PhD, how did you feel about the verdict, people's responding, communities responding, the coverage in general? How did you feel about just kind of the whole situation around this particular unfortunate event?
Well, the situation is very upsetting, because I think about just situations that, my dad talks about. My dad is in his 70s. He grew up in Detroit. He and my mother saw so much stuff growing up, things that people in our generation, for the most part, can't even think about seeing or think about happening in 2013. But here is a clear example of it happening, and there are other clear examples of things to a lesser magnitude also happening along these lines. And I mean, it's frustrating. It's just the verdict. It was disappointing from my perspective. But whenever you go into legal proceedings, I mean, you never know how that's going to go down. So the one thing I have been happy about that's come out of this is that people seem to be demonstrating peacefully, and also a lot of people that have voices are using them to express their frustration. I listened to Jamie Foxx earlier, some of the athletes we just talked about. I am happy that people are using their voice to share how they feel, even though it may not be statements that makes everybody feel warm and fuzzy. I think as a generation, the last couple of generations, we've gotten away from that because there are pressures out there to conform to saying and doing, that on a scale of 1 to 7, saying and doing that 3.5, something that's right in the middle. And so I applaud folks for kind of taking a side and speaking their mind.
Okay. Now, before you jump in, D. Wills, I want to kind of hit on a point that I'm hearing. And one thing you talked about, D. Wills, is about not just running into burnout stores and doing the same old thing. How have you felt about the way people are responding? PhD talked about it, how he's happy to see folks voicing their opinions, voicing their frustration, speaking their piece, using their constitutional right to assemble peacefully and not taking it to that next level of getting violent, being destructive. So you say we can't burn down, stores anymore. What needs to happen? You know, because, again, I'm assuming, and I could be wrong, but I'm assuming, knowing who you are and knowing your heart, that this struck a chord with you. And I think everybody's sick and tired of being sick and tired around situations like this, to quote.
Well, you know, on the day of the verdict, I was coming back from a funeral burying a young man. So, you know, it took a lot. Someone who died too young. And so, you know, I'm realizing, you know, this hinged on a law. And laws can be changed. But they take a kind of organizing that you don't typically see people do. And so when you talk about these athletes, how do you leverage your funds? You know, we're going to talk a little about Jay-Z, and you obviously are the aficionado. I'm not going to take that too deep. But what I respect about Jay, when you talked about how he organized around Obama's campaign, how you leverage your resources to organize, to put pressure. If you look at how things happen, I told you politics is local, and the people who push politics locally are business owners. Who are bigger business owners than these athletes? And they influence local politics and state politics, but people don't leverage it in the same way. And so, you know, if we want to start to see some of these changes, I think that we learned a lot from what Kevin Johnson, and I just threw Kevin out there, but this was something that his city was about to lose something, but he understood how to leverage the system. And I think part of the challenge when you're talking about the laws and supporting and challenging some of these things and putting pressure, you have to start to put your resources to leveraging those things and organizing in ways in which communities haven't always done that. And so that means you put pressure on politicians. You put all kinds of political pressure on them to begin looking at it. We have people walking around here like vigilantes with guns in it. I watched a 2020 special last week where someone walked down and he had a video. I think it was 2020 something. He had like a video camera, you know, saying, "I fear for my life." While he could tell he was saying that for the law, but he looking to shoot somebody. And so we've created this, you know, concealed weapon laws and all these things that create this space for these kind of things to happen. And unless, you know, folks leverage their resources around this locally, then you're not going to be able to do it. So I think that's part of what happens when the dust settles. You know, how many more young people got to die? We got kids dying in schools, things like that. So I think part of my thing is, you know, how do you take what you have and leverage it for social change? So it's not just the march, but when the march is over, how are people leveraging in communities and affecting that way? I think that's where you have to go. That's the next level. You know, I think if you want change, that's where you begin to have it long term.
Well spoken. And I also feel like, you know, there are multiple layers to this conversation, the national conversation that's taking place. I think there are a couple of things that really resonate with myself, with me. And the first is the conversation you're talking about around these stand your ground type laws, around gun control laws, that, again, that's where the energy needs to be put. All of this mobilizing that's going on, that's where we need to put our focus is on, one, using the power we have as a citizenship, as an educated citizenship, to do something about the laws and how the laws, because these laws are not designed to benefit people that look like you and me. You know, hearing people talk about this situation, no one ever comes around and actually says, well, didn't the young man have a right to defend himself? You know, it's all about the defendant in the situation, his right to defend himself. Well, self-defense is something that goes both ways. And so just understanding that how these laws are not designed to benefit everybody and protect everyone, that's something that really resonates with me, and it's something that we need to focus on changing. The other conversation that really resonates with me around this issue, around this situation, around this unfortunate event, is that we need to start to have a larger conversation about the value of black life, African-American life in this country, period. Kids, young African-American boys, girls are dying on a daily basis at the hands of many factors. And the media doesn't, you know, I was watching a CNN special, and the woman who was running the show did a great job of skirting the issue when she asked the panel, why aren't people talking about, why is this situation so different? How come people aren't talking about the murders in Chicago and you know, places like Flint, Michigan, Detroit, where, you know, you have some of the places per capita the highest murder rates in the country, you know? And so you have these cities, but nobody's talking about those situations. And, you know, she did a great job of skirting the issue. And I'm sitting at home like, you know why? Because y'all don't cover it. Y'all are covering this situation. Y'all are talking about this situation because it covers a wide range of people and it resonates with a wide range of people. When the issue is just about preserving black life, that's not something that the media views as profitable. And so there's a machine that exists to put black life and put the lives of black males in a very tight box. And that box is used to perpetuate systems and a power structure that really limits the options that you have and allows the power structure to benefit off your failure as an African-American male, as an African-American person. And that conversation is the one that I want to see. Really, all of these folks at these rallies, we really need to start to dig into this prison structure, the structure of schools, the laws, all of these little, we got to start connecting the dots. And that's what I hope. And I'm hopeful that this young brother Trayvon, didn't pass. He wasn't murdered for us to miss an opportunity to have these conversations in his memory. And that's what I hope really happens and really comes from this whole situation. So I don't want to get too deep into it, but I wanted to give each of us an opportunity to just speak our piece. You know, we do have this platform, and we do have folks out there who are listening. So I just wanted to take a moment to honor that situation. You know, we try and do that when there are significant events that take place socially, and they do intersect, whether people want to overtly admit it or not, they intersect with sports and intersect with life, and sports in life are not mutually exclusive. So we want to take a moment to just kind of give you guys an opportunity to put that out there, you know, for the listeners, for the RSG fam out there. You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Check out the fellas at resistancedigital.com to get all your digital needs met with no hassle, no fuss, at a low price. Get your game right. All right? So we're going to keep the show rolling. And now I want to get into this conversation about Magna Carta Holy Grail. Now, me and D-Will started this conversation last week. And again, I didn't want to influence my man at all. I wanted to let him digest it on his own terms. So after having a week of sitting with the joint, what do you think, D-Will's Magna Carta Holy Grail? How does it stack up in Jay-Z's repertoire?
Well, I think this album is going to be
appreciate it more as people listen to it. Because I think you did a good job of not going too deep. You tipped your toe in there a little bit before I had a chance to listen to it. And as I hit you on Twitter, I said, you know, I listened to it, and as I was listening, I didn't even finish the album. I hit you up and said, you know, I think this is better than you think. And part of it is, you know, Jay has this ability but after this album, I think there were certain songs where he was as political as you can get. He hit some stuff that was deep, but he has a really good way of tucking those lines in, and you got to listen to him two or three times to hear what he's saying. But like I told you, there was a run there. I think what I told you was 5 through 8. I was telling you that on Twitter.
Yeah.
I just felt like he went on a little run. And what I like about a great album is it's got balance. It's got stuff that's going to be good for the club. It's got some stuff that's going to stretch you. And I know what you were saying before about the way in which he talks about money and fame. But I think part of it is his pushback on that idea he's pushing back on. So people being critical of that, but he's coming right back at it. But I think Oceans is with Frank Ocean, featuring Frank Ocean, is a great song, man. I listen to that over and over. And the line I like is the only Christopher we acknowledge is Chris Wallace, is the line that was, like, that's a political line, but the way he delivered it was like, it was just flawless, right? But when you thought about it, it's like, that's the deep line. And just that whole, the whole setup, how it was arranged, I thought Frank Ocean did a really good job on it. But that whole run there, F-U-T-W, another good song. I love what he talks about Cassius Clay and Malcolm, and kind of uses that as, and if people who know the history in the 60s around COINTELPRO and what J. Edgar Hoover did, in the way in which people speculate that they took down the Black Panthers and other great leaders. But the way that's political right there, man. That's political. He put that in there and came deep with it. But I think throughout this album, I felt like, you know, I think people are sleeping on this album in a way that I think if, as you listen to it, you can appreciate it. And does he go over the top a little bit on the wealth thing? I think one of the things I think he's saying, why are we ashamed to talk about it? You know, and that's part of the problem. And are we supposed to expect that we get back to my discussion, but also how he leverages his wealth. And so I think that I agree that I think at some point I want him to continue to take you behind the scenes, because that was one of the comments that you made last week. I think I loved it. There were a couple of those songs where he could have gone there about really walking a little bit deeper into his experience walking through the game that he fell short on. But, you know, I think there's some songs here that I think are as political as any songs that anyone's doing right now today. At the same time, entertaining. And that's the balance. Kanye took me to a whole place. I still haven't – I listened to it once and haven't gone back to it. I feel like I got to be in the right mood. but I know it's some Thelonious Monk-type stuff Kanye got going on right now. It's like, you know, this stuff is great, but I just got to be in the right mood to listen to it, where I feel like they gave you a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and that's for me. And again, your analysis, I'm not arguing with none of that. You know, I've told PhD, you know, I don't try to influence how people listen to music. What you like is what you like, and you like that, and that's what you got from it. For me, I just feel like he didn't spaz. You know what I mean? I just want him to spaz out and really go there. You know, it was like he's getting there, and then we go the other way real quick. You know what I mean? And
well,
he's at a point where I feel like he should just go in.
But I think
what's that?
I think when you're in a position like him, that's what those power. But he said, "I'm in control of this. I ain't got to spaz out. I got this." And you mad that I got this, and I'm not doing it, Scott Boras.
Right, like, but see, that's where my taste comes into play. I appreciate Ye's joint more because he does spaz out, and it's like, dude, you're going through something right now, and you're doing it on record. And so for me,
I like that because I can get that. I feel that emotion. I feel that urgency. And, you know, and again, I'm not saying the album is bad. I'm not saying that at all. It's better than 95% of whatever you're listening to right now. It's a good album. It's good rapping. It's great beats. Everything about it, it's a solid album. But as I said on Twitter, it's Kobe dropping on a Tuesday night in Canada, in Toronto. You know what I mean? It's just, it's ho-hum. In regards to his resume, in regards to who he is, because he's capable of going for 50 or 81.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so it's not one of those performances. And so that doesn't make it bad. He just didn't up the ante on, like, yo, man, this dude still has more places he can go. He didn't increase that metaphoric ceiling on his ability where it's like, yo, he didn't push his legend further. That's all I'm saying. It's not a bad album. It's a good album, good music. There are joints that I like. You know what I mean? There are a lot of joints. I'd probably say there's probably like 5 or 6 joints on there that I really dig. Other stuff is good, but I'm not going to, you know, if I'm going through my iPod looking for a joint to put on, I'm not going to stop at one of those. If I 5 or 6 joints, I'd be like, I want to hear this today. You know what I mean? But did he further the list?
I want to hit your point because I think this is where the issue is. Because I think you need Jay-Z and you need Kanye's to move the agenda. The problem is everybody thinks we need Kanye. That's all we need. And I would say you need Kanye's and the Jay-Z type. So Kanye is not going to be – he's not interested in doing some of the stuff that Jay-Z is doing from a business standpoint. I don't think Kanye is interested in that. But that's okay because we need you to be – we need – and that's the diversity of that perspective that we have to elevate. And I think both of them represent the diversity of engagement and leadership that you need to move something. And how can you appreciate them equally? That's my push.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I'm a Jay fan through and through. Have been
it's
since
it's hard to please
pub.
You. It's hard to please
yeah.
you, man, because you
yeah.
Like, they could put you on the panel, and you're going to break stuff down much deeper. That's why I can't get too deep with you, because you'll take us into a whole other thing. You know, you kind
of... But, again, I'm not trying to influence how you see it. I'm not trying to influence. I'm just speaking my piece about how I see it. You know, music is so subjective. You know, what one person likes, another person ain't going to like. And, you know, the stuff I like and think the best stuff in the world, somebody else may listen to it, man. What are you listening to? And I can roll with that. Like, your opinion is your opinion. That's what it's about. We can have a conversation about that. So,
all right.
Hey, it's a good album. Like I said on Twitter, I wouldn't put it above. It wouldn't crack his top 6, though. That's all. That's what I'll say about it. As far as how I feel about it right now, and it may change over time. I'm not gonna be static in my opinion, or pin myself down to a certain perspective. But as of today, I feel like it wouldn't crack his top 6. Which is okay.
Well,
this top 6 is ridiculous.
And I'm going to say, you know, I just listen to No One Can Do It Better. I listen to DLC, and I still put that up against a whole bunch of albums that I'll hear.
Right,
That's my
and
stuff.
Jay said it himself. He said, you know, your first, my last verse is better than your first. And, you know, he said my your best joint ain't better than my worst. And that's basically putting it in perspective, so to speak. So I want to shift gears and bring my man PhD back into the conversation. PhD, you in the house, homie?
Yes, sir.
All right. So I want to talk about this because you're kind of our baseball head. You know, D. Will's got good baseball knowledge. Me, I'm a novice at best when it comes to baseball knowledge. You know, I kind of checked out of baseball at about 11, and I was done. Major League Baseball and this PED situation. Now HGH is an issue. You know, they got a connection to the lab in Miami. A lot of cats are connected. They're paying for a list of guys who receive services from this this lab in Miami that's been shut down. A-Rod's name is on it. Ryan Braun's name is on it. Some pretty prominent names. with those two fellas. How do you feel about PEDs, baseball, and just the whole way they're approaching kind of dealing with the issue?
I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. It reminds me of Young and the Restless. A lot of drama, a lot of posturing. It feels scripted. You know, the leaks, they feel highly coordinated. It's just, I don't know what to believe anymore. You know, I don't know what to believe. I don't know what to trust. I just don't know. My hands are up. And I want so hard, so much, to believe in baseball again. You know, tonight's the All-Star game. I have not set my DVR. I'm not watching it right now. I may catch it tomorrow on SportsCenter, or if I'm listening to, you know, sports talk in the radio on the drive to work. I remember the All-Star games with Bo Jackson. You know, the All-Star games with Lou Whitaker when he forgot his uniform and he had to get one from the souvenir shop. You know, I remember the days of Whitaker and Trammell playing shortstop in the All-Star game. I remember, right, you know, seeing Strawberry and, you know, like seeing these matchups and that, you know, that you didn't normally see with the American League and National League. Well, you see it now. You see it more, you know, interleague play. And I'm not saying it to discourage interleague play because I like interleague play. But I think one of the downsides to it is that the All-Star game loses luster. We know less about the stars than we did 10 or 15 years ago. And unfortunately, baseball is just falling back, man. Basketball and football have moved so much further towards our quote-unquote national pastime that we almost see baseball season as a time to take a break, to catch up from being so emotionally involved in the basketball season and the finals. And all of a sudden, you know, we're just counting down to football. You know, there's X number of days, you know, before college football starts. There's X days before the NFL starts. Well, wait a minute. We're in the midst of baseball. And who cares? Outside of the purist. You know, I was just talking to my brother earlier. My brother is either in front of the TV watching an All-Star game right now or is DVR'd and he will stay away from email, text, whatever, so he can sit down and watch the game. Those purists are far and far in between now. You know, the casual fan, for the most part, just baseball is not, like, baseball's biggest thing outside of the World Series, the All-Star game, it's not even on the radar anymore. So, you know, your initial question was, what's going on with his PEDs? I'm sick of it. It reminds me of Young and the Restless, and I'm just sick of baseball right now. I'm sick of it.
And this is where I'm at with it. I haven't even thought about the All-Star game, and I'm watching a previously recorded NBA Summer League. So this ain't even live. And I'm watching Summer League games right over the All-Star game. That's me. That's my own twist of reality. I know everybody's not like that. But I will say, you know, what around this whole baseball situation, what bugs me are the people who say, well, just let everybody use roids and regulate it. And listen, if you're a baseball fan, you can't – I mean, how can you – how do you feel about a sport where you feel like you can only enjoy it if all of the guys are on roids? Like, that's the only way you can enjoy this? Like, I just feel like, no, that's not the answer. It's not, the answer is not to just let everybody do whatever and just open up the floodgates. And that's the only way you can enjoy this. Because, you know, they said, well, they should be jacked up. Let them hit home runs 600 feet. That's what I want to see. Really? That's the only reason you love this sport? And so you can see that? And without that, you don't enjoy it? You know what I mean? And you hear purists say that. You know, well, just let everybody do something. You know what I mean? I pay my money. I want to see guys all, you know, yoked out. And is that really what it's about? You know what I mean? Because when I watch any sport, I want to see somebody doing something with the natural ability they have that's amazing. And that's impressive. That's what entertains me. Is watching. And once I find out you're not doing that naturally, I'm off. I'm off. I'm out. I'm done. I'm throwing my hands up and I'm walking away. I'm turning around. I mean, you're dead to me.
Major League Baseball,
you know what I mean?
They need to find a way to integrate some of their best stars. And, you know, what you find is for individuals who are not native English speakers, Major League Baseball and the domestic networks, they have a hard time. How do we highlight these individuals?
Right.
You know, they're scared to put them in front of a camera unless, you know, they make, like, they're the MVP or something. Even when that, it's, you know, it's kind of like interviewing Pop at halftime. You know, they give you two questions. You know, they need to figure out a way, like, how do you bridge this gap? You know, because it's happened in other arenas. You know, it happens in education. It happens in other sports. You know, but baseball, for some reason, they have not been able to bridge that gap. And so you have these stars that are, you know, excellent baseball players, but for some reason, you know, baseball has failed to market them effectively. You know, you look at the NBA's commercials, they embrace their international flavor. They embrace their, you know, national diversity. You know, like with the NBA Cares commercials, with, you know, even some of the outside sponsors have, you know, done these commercials where they have all international ball players, basketball players. Baseball, you know, if there is a sport, you know, in the U.S. of the Big Four, you would think that, you know, baseball and hockey would be able to do that a lot better. And I just don't see why baseball has been able to not break through this excellent opportunity.
Yeah, I think baseball's in a weird spot right now. That you had a generation of superstars who now people don't really like. When you talk about the Barry Bonds, the Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa's, the A-Rods, Rafael Palmeiros, all of these dudes that people are just kind of like, I don't like those dudes. So you lost a lot of superstar capital with those guys. And baseball's in a spot where they don't have, like, a guy. Like, who's the best baseball player? You know, Miguel Cabrera, is he a household name? You know, like, you have to have a guy who, in your league, the casual fan knows this is the best guy in your game. You know, whether it's Kobe, LeBron, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, these are names that when you say them, people know what sport you're talking about, and they know that this is one of the best guys, and they should pay attention and watch. And there's not a guy like that in baseball. And when you look at this All-Star game, there's 30 new All-Stars, 30 first-time All-Stars this year. So baseball is in a place where there's really a void, in my opinion, of true superstars. And I think you're hitting at some of that, D. Wills, you talk about. They're not developing folks. Putting folks out there, superstars and language and culture have a lot to do with that. Because, again, I checked out as an 11-year-old, you're talking about 91, 92. That was back when you had Bo kicking it. You had Ken Griffey. You had a Tony Gwynn. You had a Ricky Henderson running around the bases popping his collar. You had guys that I could connect with. Those are the guys that I remember. And as time went on, those guys slowly started to disappear. And so with baseball right now, they have to figure out how to develop some young stars that people can – I mean, even when I think about hockey, Sidney Crosby, Ovechkin, I can come up with names of people that are supposed to be the baddest dudes in that game. And with baseball, I cannot. There's no face of the league. You know what I mean? And that I think, if I'm a baseball purist, would be a bit troublesome. Because again, yeah. you don't have a space in the consciousness. There's nobody occupying a space in the consciousness of the casual sports fan. You know what I mean?
Well,
D. Wills, I want to pull you in real quick and transition it, because it seemed like people were trying to put Yasiel Puig in that spot for a minute, and I've been going off on Twitter about this for about a week since he didn't get voted in, because, you know, listening to the Colin Cowherds, listening to the Talking Heads, Baseball Tonight, Cats, the Buster Olney's, the Jason Starks, the Tim Kirchens, they were all saying, everybody, to a man, was saying, you got to put Yasiel Puig in the All-Star game because the fans want to see him. The fans want to see him. It's about the All-Star game is about the fans. It doesn't matter he's only played a month. This, that, and the other. and then the fans didn't vote him in. And so I'm looking like, yo, did these writers try and create a superstar? Did they try and I don't fault them for it. They need somebody to cover. They need somebody to talk about. He's in L.A. He's for it. It's a glorified. It's a traditional. There's cachet with the franchise, with the Dodger name, you know, the Dodger blue. What did you think of that? I felt like I was being sold a bill of goods that these cats are telling me everybody, you know, it's like people telling you, you know, well, everybody wants this, everybody. And then when it comes time to make it happen, you know, it's like here in Wisconsin, we had to recall vote for our governor. Everybody, we know, we get all these signatures, and you think, well, this cat's going to get ousted. This going to be recall. This is the will of the people. This is what the people want. And we had the election, and he still won. And it's just like, I guess that's not what the people wanted. I guess the people didn't want that at all. You know what I mean? And so that's how I felt about the whole Yasiel Puig situation. And then it seemed like they started to turn on him a little bit, and there's some negative stories that came out right as he was about to lose the vote. How do you feel about the whole Puig hype and this kid's talent? And because you have kind of that, you're kind of like the institutional memory around here since you're a little bit older. I'm not going to front like you way older, but you're a little bit older than PAD and myself. So you kind of play that role as a historian of sorts. So give us some context around Yasiel Puig.
I'll just say this. It's a microcosm of why baseball needs Jay-Z. Back to our other conversation. They just miss all the opportunities. And they don't even create the conversation well. And it just became divisive. I think people there was fatigue with it. And so, you know, you get to a certain point where, you know, the economists out there will appreciate this, the point of diminishing returns. There's a point where things start to work against you. And I just think they oversold it. This is a person, they need to find a mechanism. I mean, NBA doesn't miss these opportunities. NFL will find a way to make that face out there. It just seems like baseball trips over itself to protect the hypocrisy. You know, I hear Bob Costa, who I have a lot of respect for, try to justify greenies versus steroids. They both illegal. But when you take somebody who is that smart, that trusted, and is trying to defend folks who we knew took greenies to make a case against steroids is all you need to know about baseball's problems. And so you have this long phenom, and you can't even catch the wave on this without tripping over it. Then you got players come out here saying all this crazy stuff. And I'm just like, where are you coming from with this? It's like they talk about tradition when their history is littered with hypocrisy. And they just smile at you like you're supposed to believe it. So they got a lot of issues. I think you put it, you know, they haven't figured out, you know, NBA doesn't struggle with marketing international players. Right? They got a lot of international players who they figure out how to make it work. So why is it that the NBA got it and baseball can't figure it out? All you need to know about this. They missed an opportunity. Yeah. And that's part of the problem. They made some great changes, some other things, but they missed an opportunity here, and it's just an example of why cats like Jay-Z going to eat up baseball. Because he's going to figure out how to market these cats.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if that does have an impact, because I think there is a point where baseball is they don't have that. Those dudes, a couple of dudes, a matchup you can highlight. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, just anything. You know, give me something that I can kind of chew on for a minute. You know what I mean? As somebody who's not, I'm not deep into sabermetrics and never will be. You know what I'm saying? It's not something I'm going to do. But right now, again, I'm watching NBA Summer League games to get my sports fix. I'm open. I'm a free agent.
It's interesting because if you look at basketball, the way – so baseball in the last decade has some really exciting times. You know, you look at Boston. Boston had not – the Red Sox had not won a championship. You know, you had the curse. You had all this different stuff going on. You know, and then finally they get close with the Yankees and they – you know, they losing in game seven, and they finally beat the Yankees, and they make it to the World Series, and they win it. So that storyline is a little bit flatter. It's a little bit flatter. It's one of the big storylines that baseball had. You know, if the Cubs do something exciting, make the playoffs, go to the World Series, win it, that's going to be another storyline they don't have. But if you look at basketball, what was the big storyline a couple years ago? Will LeBron win a championship? Of course. He's won it, but basketball is still striving, you know, still thriving. We're looking for, we don't know what the next specific story will be, but the stories out there are enough to captivate us. In baseball.
And there's a guy for people to challenge. I think that's where the stories are now. Okay, who's going to knock him off? You have a guy who is the best dude in your game. Now, who's going to knock him off the perch?
Yeah, baseball missed a window. I mean, Derek Jeter is probably the most, you know, recognizable domestic face in baseball. Derek Jeter is 38, 39 years old. You know, we're both from Kalamazoo. He's my favorite player. But Derek Jeter only has a couple of good years left, if that. You know, and so baseball has not transitioned. It's kind of like the NBA. You know, Kareem's getting ready to retire, and they don't know who's going to carry the torch. No, the NBA knew who was going to carry the torch. Dr. J's getting ready to retire. We don't know who's going to carry the torch. Yes, they knew exactly who was going to carry the torch. You know, even when Jordan left and there was no clear person, there were enough people that we knew the stories that could step up, whether that was Shaq, Kobe, you know, whoever it was. And baseball has missed that gap. They have missed that window. You know, I think about when Wall Street was thriving. You know, we didn't think about what happens if the market crashes. And baseball is in this funk right now. You know, times were good after that strike in the mid-90s. And, guys, I can go all day about this. So at some point, you just may need to mute my mic. Okay? Matter of fact, I'll stop there.
Okay.
Yeah, a little fired up.
Yeah, I can tell, man. That's why you are a resident baseball guy, man, because I'm not going to get that fired up about baseball.
Let me tell you why I'm mad.
Oh, man. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions. So now I want to just have a quick conversation before we get to talking NBA. Johnny Football. This is a dude that's getting on my last nerves. And it's not because of necessarily what he's doing. It's because of the people who are defending him and saying, well, oh, he's just being a college kid, and this is what college kids do. This is what normal college kids do. Right. The key word is normal. Right? The key word is normal. He is not a normal college kid. You know, I tell my daughter, I tell the kids that I coach, if you want to be treated special, you have to act special. You know what I'm saying? You have to carry yourself in a special way. You can't want special treatment and then act like everybody else. It don't work like that. You can't act like the average kid and then want special results. If you want special people are special for a reason. They're special because they do things differently than everybody else. So stop defending this boy, saying, well, he's just being a regular 20-year-old. Right. You know what, though? Regular 20-year-olds don't win Heisman trophies, all right? And so I'm just throwing it out there. I'm off on Johnny Football. This dude, in my book, is Ryan Leaf 2.0.
Ooh.
And I'm dropping the bus label on this dude, man.
Come on now, Marcus.
This dude
is going to
be a
bust. Don't do that, Marcus. Come on, man.
This dude is going to be a bust.
That's just another
D12
post going.
Hey, he's in the box. He's in the corner. The D12 is in one corner. This cat is in another corner. Kobe's in another corner. He's in the corner, man. I'm out, man. I'm out. Any Johnny Football stock I might have had in my eye on, I'm off it. I'm selling. This dude, he doesn't have the decision making skills already to be a legit pro type of quarterback. Like if you just can't stay off Twitter, I mean, wait till you get some money. You know what I'm saying? Like, wait, again, they should have never gave that dude no money. Quote Rick Jackson from Chappelle's Show. They should have never gave that dude no money. There's certain people that you just can't give money to. He ain't even got money yet, and he don't know how to act. I'm out. That's my Manziel spiel right there. I don't know how you guys feel about him. What do you guys think of D-Wiz? What do you think of, man, Johnny Football as a prospect?
Well, I felt as soon as he went to Heisman, I said, this cat's a 30-30 waiting to happen. And it's happened. He's about to have a 30-30 moment. I mean, he's a kid from a well-to-do family, a lot of privilege, man. And them pro locker rooms are not a place they're going to try and put some on him. He's a great athlete, a lot to prove. We'll find out if he got that Cam Newton swag. Because Cam looked it right in the eye and keep playing. That's what Cam did. But I don't know if he got that in him. And the SEC, they're gonna pin back their ears. They're already thinking about it. Alabama, they can't sleep right now. They rolling over like we can't wait for John. So I think he's a 30-30 waiting to happen. And he's the kind of kid that if he has a bad season, you know, there's this thing called growth mindset versus fixed mindset. A lot of high-achieving folks like this kid has a fixed mindset. And so let him have a little adversity. And he's going to crumble. You already see it when he left the camp because he was criticized. You know, it's all unraveling, and the coaches should be in on him. But they probably can't control him right now. You know, so I don't know. He's undersized. I'm going to never say never, but I think he's 30-30 waiting to happen. That's all I got to say. You heard it, Mark the tape.
All right. I want to keep us rolling. I don't want to get us stuck on Johnny Football too much. I had to get that out of my system. I've been holding that in all day because it's just been driving me nuts. But you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. We're going to talk about the NBA. Now, we've had free agency. It's kind of winding down. There's still a few guys out there who could be some relevant pieces. Some guys are being amnesty. Drew Gooden got amnesty today. Mike Miller got amnesty today. So it's some cats out there. I don't know if anybody's going to pick up Mike Miller. I mean, his back goes out every 20 minutes. Meta World Peace got picked up by the Knicks. I called that as soon as he was amnestied. On Twitter, I put it out there. $50, he winds up in NYC. What I want to do right now, while we have some time, I really want to take the last half hour of the show and really dig into this. I want you to rank, give me your top eight in each conference as of right today. Now, this should evolve over time. Right today, right now, I want your top eight in each conference. I'm going to start with PhD if you're prepared. Are you ready?
No.
If you need a minute, just you ready?
I'll take it. I'll take a minute.
All right. Run with it.
Okay.
you said you need a minute. Oh, okay. Right. I didn't know. I thought you said you were going to take a minute and go ahead and give
it. I mean, I caught an audible. You know, Peyton Manning, you know, I caught an audible. You know, I'm a young
man,
Reggie Wayne. Like, wait a minute. I thought I read it wrong, but Peyton yelling at me. What?
You waving off the screen.
You were waving off the screen.
Right.
He wasn't hearing it. He was
right.
He came right back to you.
My bad.
Right, this
My
guy
bad.
Coming to give a Bobby Knight screen, you know, hands over the groin, okay? You're like, wait, man, get out of here.
My bad. I don't listen good.
Right.
All right. He went.
You okay, man? I mean, you know, people admit they don't listen well.
Right,
typically, that comes after years and years of therapy, man. You okay?
I'm married. I'm on year 9. Sometimes you gotta talk it up. Yeah, I don't listen to it sometimes.
I'm ready. So you want me to give the 8 teams I think is gonna make the playoffs in the East and the West, or just the East?
As of today, the best you can. Yeah. As of today, let's go East. Let's all do East, and then we'll all do West. So let's go Eastern Conference first. Give me your top 8.
All right. I'm gonna go Cleveland
as 8.
I'm going to go Boston 8, Cleveland 7, I'm going to go Charlotte 6. That's my big upset.
Ooh,
Charlotte,
that is a big upset.
Yeah.
Okay.
So actually, I'm going to go Cleveland 6 and Charlotte 7. So I'll start over.
if you can't tell, he's probably doing this on the fly.
Yeah, I am. I'm gonna go Boston 8, Charlotte 7, Cleveland 6. Now it gets fun. I'm gonna go the Knicks 5 because I'm not a huge fan of the Knicks. I'm gonna go Brooklyn 4. Chicago 3, Indiana 2, and Miami 1. And actually, so everybody out there, don't hold me to this 8 because I just switched twice and I'm going to switch again. I think Miami is going to be a 2 or 3 seed. I don't think they're going to win the East or, like, have the best record coming out the East, but I think they'll still make the finals and win it. But based on my previous comments, I just don't think the regular season is going to matter as much to these guys. And they're going to slide in 2 or 3 seed, but it won't matter as much.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the squad that you got that I don't have in my is Charlotte. Expound.
Yeah. So I like what Charlotte's done. The biggest pickup is Al Jefferson. I think Al Jefferson gives them a whole nother look at what they haven't had. And, you know, I've been in love with, I mean, Al Jefferson has brought me multiple fantasy championships. And I mean, this isn't for the listeners. This is specifically for Marcus and Devon. But in the last 12 months, I've won 4 fantasy leagues, 3 in football, 1 in basketball. And I just want to throw it out there. So, coming back, I like what Al Jefferson
Jamaica's
brings
good.
To the table.
Yeah, Jamaica's good.
Yeah.
Jamaica's very good.
My man. Can I get that one more time?
Jamaica's good.
Yeah, Jamaica's good.
Yeah.
Jamaica's very good.
Very good. Yeah, and I think Charlotte has
very
enough.
Good at fantasy sports, all right?
That's right. Belly, one of the best, worst movies you'll ever watch. The first 35 minutes is very captivating. So I think Charlotte has enough pieces where they can make a move mid-season or maybe even a little bit earlier, you know, whether that's moving Zeller, Biyombo, Kid Gilchrist. I think they have enough good pieces where they can move somebody around to get another piece. But I like the core of what they have right now with Jefferson. I think Henderson is ready to take the next step, either he or Gilchrist. And so, again, out of the East, saying that they're a 7th seed, that's not a huge leap. I mean, at some point, a broke clock is right twice a day. And Charlotte has been in the lottery every year of their existence. Every year. They have qualified for the lottery, regardless if they have the pick or not. So at some point, that talent's going to come to roost.
Valid points. Valid points. Very valid. D. Wills, your top eight in the East.
All right. So don't hold me to it, but I'll make it happen. Let me do this. I'll start from the bottom to the top, because that's how I did it. I did it from the bottom to the top. Y'all didn't catch that. But anyway.
I got you, D. Wills.
I'm going with Detroit at eight.
Ooh.
Yeah, Chauncey's back in the building, y'all. You ready? Here we come.
Don't believe the hype.
Atlanta, for some reason, I feel like Atlanta's a seven. Even though they got lots going on, I think something's going to happen. I think they got a lot of pieces moving in and out, but I think.
They still have a team in Atlanta?
I think they still have. I just feel
Justin, no, have Justin call in here, man. Justin got in real quick because I didn't have the Hawks in my eight.
I'm sorry, Justin.
This is my shout out to Justin. I got Cleveland next, then New York, Chicago, Indiana, Brooklyn, and Miami. I think I got that. So that's my order.
Okay.
Detroit.
Okay.
Atlanta,
so you got to explain. You got to explain Atlanta. You got to explain Atlanta.
I think Horford getting a little bit more space to operate. I think this is a guy that can prove that he can carry a team. And I feel like one of the things I felt like they've always had too many of the same players playing around the same position. And one, they need to create space for one of them just to be logging the minutes. I got a feeling he's going to be like a poor version of Barkley back in the 76ers day. He's going to put some numbers up. But I think I like the pieces. I like the young. They got the young kid from the German. Did they got his point guard?
Yeah, Schroeder.
Yeah,
the black
Schroeder.
German.
I think he's a kid that I think he's going to make an impact. Just help it energize them a little bit. I thought they had so many different guards. I know they had to create some space a little bit, but I think they're going to be. It's going to be a little difficult for them early on, but I think they're going to win some games they shouldn't win, and I think they're going to just make a run towards the end. I think the only problem I don't like about it is that you got to get bad to get good, and I think that's always been Atlanta's issue. They've never been bad enough to get that ultimate player, and I just think that they'll do the right thing.
Actually, that's not true, though.
Huh?
That's not true. They passed up on a lot of guys.
They missed on a lot of dudes.
They've had some picks, but they've missed.
They missed on it.
You take Sheldon Williams instead of TP3 or Darren Williams. Come on, man.
Atlanta's. I just felt like they're a seven. But I think you can mix it up. I think between Atlanta, Detroit, I agree with the Bobcats. I think. The Zeller pick looks better with the free agency pickups now. I think he's going to play much better. They're going to have a better team. I think that bottom part of that East could go either way. I just feel like, for some reason, I feel like Atlanta's going to sit somewhere in seven. I don't have facts to back this up. You can hit the drop. I am feeling good about Detroit. I think Detroit, particularly with having Chauncey back in terms of leadership and just I think they got a lot of nice pieces. I feel like they're gonna do it. I like Detroit.
Okay.
So
okay.
Atlanta's my feeling they're gonna make it. They could be at seven or eight, but I just feel like they're gonna be there. And we all gonna be watching how they
D Wills, what are your thoughts on Rasheed Wallace being an assistant coach? I gotta ask you, D.
Well, I mean, everybody you talked to said Rasheed is one of the smartest players they've ever played with. Knows the game. Yes, he's an emotional guy, but if you talk to people who play with him, they say he's one of the smartest players they've ever played with. And so I think he'll be really good for the big men, developing, being a little bit more crafty. You know, I think a lot of what they're trying to do, particularly with bringing Chauncey and everybody, is getting kind of that locker room and that culture back. And so I think he'll play a important role in terms of recreating that culture, what's expected in the locker room. But he's a smart guy. He knows how to play the game. He could be helpful.
This is what I like the Rashee hire for the simple fact you just gave $16 million a year to Josh Smith.
Yeah.
You need somebody that speaks head case on
That's
your
right.
bench. Because you stuck
That's
with
right.
your boy for 4 years. You need a nut. You need somebody who can say, dog,
yeah.
I understand. when Josh Smith is going off in practice and talking crazy and nobody really know who he's mad at or why he's mad, Rashee can come home and be like, okay, you know, he's a head case whisperer. So you need that. But I got 5 words to sum up how I feel about Rashee Wallace as a coach. Technical foul on the bench. I'm going 6 games before we hear that.
Yeah.
I'm going 6 games. Boy, the first
we'll
Joey Crawford game. The first Joey Crawford game, she is getting a tech on the bench.
I mean, can he yell out ball don't lie on the bench in a suit? Can you hear that? I mean, is that legal?
Brian,
does that work?
Brian,
yeah, I think this is really going
to
go really
game.
Well. This is going to go really well, or it's going to totally flop. I don't think there's any in between. This is Rashee. Either he's going to be a great influence, smart, astute, and this dude's going, or it's going to be you just got Rashee Wallace and the coach in a suit on your bench. You got
can
the same
think,
player on his bench.
Fellas, can we think of a player, basketball, who was a wild card, a straight wild card like Rashee? I'm not talking wild card, you know, mild. No, I'm talking wild card, big joker. Can we think of a guy who was a big joker who went into coaching and became a head coach? Because this would be tripped out 12 years from now. Rashee is leading an organization. Because if he goes right, that's where he's headed. But guys, can we think of any player that's been as big of a wild card or something near Rashee or the biggest wild card that we know that became a head coach? Can we think of some examples?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm D. Wills, again, you're the institutional memory around here. You may have to chime in, but I want to say we're in uncharted waters.
Yes. I'm trying to think of it.
I don't know how this is going to go.
I'll wait.
No frame of reference.
I don't know. I don't think we have one. This is uncharted water. I mean, and I'm a little nervous because I'm still my confidence, Joe, is waning. You know, I'm trying to believe. I'm trying to believe right now.
Yeah. I need Joe to stop wearing jeans and a jacket to press conferences. And any listeners out there, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, tomorrow, whenever you listen, you think of a wild card, you know, go on to Facebook or tweet us to let us know because I racked my brain trying to figure this out over the last minute, and I haven't thought of anybody.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody, man. Guys who come to mind are guys like Vernon Maxwell. He ain't coaching nobody. Dennis Rodman.
I think the only one that's
close. Nobody.
Dennis Payday is Sloan.
Or John Lucas. Maybe John Lucas. There we go. Maybe John
Lucas.
John Lucas
or Sloan.
Well, John
Sloan
Lucas was more wild off the court, right? I mean, he was more wild off the court. But was he... was he a wild card
Sloan
on the court?
Sloan was one on the court. Sloan was wild. Sloan was physical, ready to fight from with everything. You know, Chicago folks are probably just Ant fan, but Sloan was one of those cats that would fight you anywhere.
Okay. So we have to do some research.
But not, he's not
RSG.
Still, he's still not Rashee.
Yeah, I mean, I'm about to go to the micro
Rashee
in the library. go to the microfiche in the library to figure out what kind of wild card Jerry Sloan was.
Man, I had to do an assignment with the microfiche, man. Hated it. Oh, man, let me give y'all my top eight real quick. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. We're giving you our top eight in each conference in the NBA. We're in the Eastern Conference right now. I'm going to start one, and I'm going to start from the top. I'm going top down. I got Miami at one. The Brooklyn Nets at two. The Chicago Bulls at three. The Indiana Pacers at four. The Cleveland Cavaliers at five. The Detroit Pistons at six. The New York Knicks at seven. And the Washington Bullets. Yep. The Washington Bullets. All right. I ain't calling them a wizard. I'm done with that, man. That's just a whack thing, man.
Explain Washington.
I will. And let me just say this real quick piece, man. People are getting at the New Orleans Pelicans about their nickname. And I just had to go at somebody on Twitter, and I was like, come on, man. Like, are you serious? You mad about Pelicans? But the Spurs, the Nuggets, the Wizards, you know what I'm saying? Those are okay. The Clippers, you're cool with those nicknames. Those aren't even any – what is a Clipper? A big boat. That's scary. That's menacing. That's frightening. It's a Spur. You're talking about the little thing on the back of your shoe. You're going to name your team after that because it's scary? A Nugget? Come on. So you know what I mean? So I'm calling them the Bullets because they actually got a scary nickname in their past. So I'm going with the Bullets. The Bullets, this is where I'm at with them. The big man – The second half of the season, once John Wall came back, things started to fall into place. Emeka Okafor could be Emeka Okafor. You know, he could shoot shots around the rim and rebound. Nene got to be Nene. You know, shoot a high percentage, be active on the glass, be active on deep. You know, Bradley Beal started to find himself. John Wall can keep them at 500. You know, I think he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. You still got to find a jump shot, but he figured out last season how to control a basketball game and to use his speed and his athletic ability to impact the game. And I think there are going to be a lot of teams tanking. And I think the Bullets may be able to sneak into the playoffs with 37 to 40-some wins. Slightly below 500, and I think that's something that they're capable of. And Otto Porter, even though he's struggling in summer league, I think, again, playing with a legit point changes a whole lot, and you can see the difference in that team once, both on the court and statistically, the difference in that team, and in the win column, the difference in that team once they had a legit point guard, somebody to make sure that the right guys are getting the right shots and in the right places, and somebody that could set people up and make it easy for an Emeka Okafor, make it easy for Nene. You know, you get a couple of guys, a couple of easy baskets, and the defense steps up. It's an unbelievable thing. And I don't know if you've ever seen it before. A guy scores a basket, and all of a sudden he's a lockdown defender on the next possession. Unbelievable phenomenon. Never played any pickup basketball. Just watch. And let a dude hit a three. Watch him run. Now he's picking up at half court now. You know, he ain't even guarding the guy with the ball, but he's on him. So I think that they can sneak in at an eighth spot. But I see the Cavs making a Golden State-like jump this year. Last year, Golden State kind of made that jump, going from an okay team, a team that had some pieces, to a team that was a good team. And I think they've taken another jump to becoming a team that's actually a possible threat. Out west. So we're going to move out west. We got about 7 minutes left, so we can't be as long-winded with these Western Conference, with our Western Conference predictions as we were with our Eastern Conference. So I'll start us off in the West. I got the Clippers, one. I got OKC, two. I got San Antonio, three. I got Golden State, four. I got Memphis at five. I got Houston at six. At seven, I have the Dallas Mavericks. And at eight, I have the New Orleans Pelicans.
I know Justin. You didn't say Lakers at all. I thought I was listening through. I think I missed the Lakers. Did I miss the Lakers?
I didn't say the Lakers. Why would I say the Lakers?
All right, I'll leave that alone. I'll leave it for you and Justin.
Why would I say the Lakers?
I'll leave that for y'all on Twitter. I will do that. Okay. Okay.
So, yeah. So that's where I stand. You know, Justin had a problem with me having Houston at 6, and then in his 8, he had him at 5. I'm like, Justin, you just being Justin right now. How Justin of you to be mad that I had them at 6 and you had them at 5. But that's my boy. That's my boy. So yeah, I like what Golden State did adding Iguodala. You know, I think you got to have defensive wings if you want a shot. You got to be able to stop a Durant. You got to be able to stop a LeBron and a D-Wade. And they bolstered that particular area where now they have, you know, three guys in Thompson, Iguodala, Barnes, and the fourth in Draymond Green, who you can throw at a Kevin Durant or a LeBron for a few minutes and get some good defensive work done. You know, you can't stop those guys, but you can contain them a little bit. And Houston, I think it's just going to take them a while to figure it out. You know, I like what they've done. Dwight, as much, again, I'm on the dude like nobody's business. But he's a good player, and he's going to a franchise that made sense. He finally made a decision that, to me, was the right decision for him. So he gained a couple points in my book. D. Wills, give me your 8 in the West.
So you know I hit you up on Twitter on this, but I'm going with San Antonio at 1, OKC at 2, the Clippers at 3, Golden State at 4, Houston at 5, Memphis at 6. Surprisingly, I think the Lake Show might do something. And I put them at the 7 and Dallas at 8.
All right. Yeah, I ain't buying them. I ain't
even
drinking
though,
the purple
I think
gold Kool-Aid.
They're going for it. I think they might do something.
I ain't drinking the purple and gold Kool-Aid. I'm off that. PhD, what's your top 8 in the West?
Dallas 7, the Pelicans. I'm sorry, Dallas 8, the Pelicans 7. Yes, Pelicans 7, Lakers 6. Houston 5, Clippers 4, Golden State 3, San Antonio 2, and OKC as a top seed coming out the West.
You ain't got Memphis making it?
Nah, man. Memphis, I don't know what Memphis was thinking, getting rid of Lionel Hollins.
You just holding a grudge.
Don't take it personal.
You got to leave good enough alone, man.
My man just angry. Nah, man, they dropped Lionel Hollins. I ain't got no time for that. Well, that's a two-minute warning, Joe, right there. You know, we winding down. So before we go, we have to do the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. So, fellas, let's go ahead and get into it. All right, so this week's Dog of the Week, again, is brought to you by Resistance. Make sure you hit up the fellas at Resistance Digital to get all your digital needs met at a low price. No hassle, no fuss, no muss. It gets the job done, gets the tech game right, no problem. All right, Dog of the Week, fellas. PhD, Dog of the Week, who you got?
My Dog of the Week, because I have not been on the show for a while, is LeBron James for winning his second championship.
Why are you bringing up old stuff?
Boom.
All right. D. Wills, Dog of the Week.
My Dog of the Week goes out to my guy, Sean Frazier, who just became an athletic director at Northern Illinois University. That's my guy, Sean. He's up and coming. Check him out. I'm loving it. I'm happy for him.
All right. My dog of the week, man, I'm going to have to go with Freddie Freeman with the upset, getting voted into the All-Star game over what looked to be the unquestioned favorite in Yasiel Puig. So shout out to Freddie Freeman, working hard. So that's this edition of the Real Sports Guys. Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio. We're taking off till next week. We'll be back here, same place, same time. Take care and peace.